Good evening, everyone. We'll start in a minute or two. Good to have you all on. Hi, Robbie. All right, let's wait another 30 seconds and then we'll start. All right, I think we'll start. It's 8 o'clock. Even though we're on Zoom, we're still Bina, and therefore we start on time. So we'll make a start. It's great to be with everyone. I hope everyone's doing well and staying safe and staying strong during this trying time, but it's great to be together with everyone. So like we do from time to time, we do a schmooze, and we thought since everyone's at home anyway, we're in lockdown, we'll do another one of these. And it's just a time to have a more informal style discussion about different topics, all different range of topics. So tonight's topic is titled it Faribul. Now, I don't know if that's a term that everyone understands. I think it's a very South African term, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's a sort of it's a Yiddish word. And it means when you're sort of upset with someone, we have something against somebody. And unfortunately, this is quite a prevalent thing where people are hurt by someone else, and people have something against someone else, bear a grudge against someone else. And the question is how to deal with that. And what we want to do tonight is try and discuss this in a more, first of all, in a more family sort of setting, how that relates to immediate family, siblings, children, parents, etc. And then perhaps we'll get into a more broader sense, communities, and how communities can get along better. But I want to more focus on sort of the more immediate family. And just as we do before every schmooze, we discuss different topics, and some of them are quite sensitive. I think it's always important to point out, and I'm sure my father will emphasize this again, this is, God forbid, not a judgment on anyone. We're not judging anyone. Every situation is unique, and everyone has their own story and their own. And this is a serious discussion, actually. We're not making light of anything or making a joke out of anything. People have been through different things in life and have various reasons for things when they go through life. So it's obviously not with judgment at all, but we want to try and discuss this from a general point of view and also, of course, a Jewish point of view as well. What does Judaism have to say about this very important topic? So I want to begin and ask Father Tai, if you want to just tell us, you've canceled, counseled many people, I should say, spoken to many people. And I imagine, not that you've told me, because when people come to you, it's confidential, obviously, but I can imagine that people tell you and share with you stories like this, that they don't talk to a relative or immediate family member, etc. So before we get into what one should do about that and what the correct way of going about that is, in your experience, what are the most common reasons why people don't talk to each other? And especially, I'm asking that specifically in a family setting. I think, you can have someone in a wider community you don't talk to, you think they're a very bad person, whatever the case is. But when you have immediate family members, someone you grew up with, someone, parents, children, children's parents, siblings, I guess spouses is for a different schmooze, I imagine. That's a different topic altogether. In your experience, what's the reason that sort of triggers such almost extreme scenario, such extreme situation?
Okay, so first of all, it's great to be with everyone again. And I'm happy you explained the word faribul, because it's an important word to explain. So I think I just want to reiterate what you said, first of all, is that relationships are complicated things. And sometimes things go on between people, whether it's family or friends or acquaintances or whatever the case is, which are very complicated and very deep, and there can be all sorts of reasons why people get into trouble or people get into conflict. And sometimes it's very difficult. And again, I think what you said was correct. It's without any judgment. It's sad. It's always sad when people don't get on. It's always sad when people don't talk to each other. And there's many, many reasons. But I guess the focus of what I want to try and what we're trying to sort of focus on tonight is the fact that people sometimes get locked into this thing about not talking to each other. Like, I don't talk to that person, or I don't talk to them, or they don't talk to me, and that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about that sooner or later. But I think why people, but it is important to know the reason, and the reason ranges. There's a very, very wide range of reasons. Sometimes the reasons are more legitimate than others. Sometimes people just clash. Sometimes people's personalities clash and get on each other's nerves, especially when it's family, because with close people, the more people are close, the more they irritate each other. Sometimes there's past history, there's breakdown of relationships. Sometimes people hurt each other. Everyone has a different perspective. Everyone has a different opinion. Sometimes people feel really hurt by other people. Sometimes people grow up and there's things from way back and from youth that people feel really hurt. Sometimes there's extreme things like abuse or real family dysfunction, that children were very, very hurt by parents, for example. And that brings to a relationship breakdown, and therefore people just, the relationship spirals into a complete dysfunction to the point where the relationship no longer exists, and no longer exists to the point of not talking to each other. So that's that can be very serious, and sometimes that comes from a legitimate place also. I think the problem, however, is that sometimes people break off relationships. You say, like, not talking to each other, people break off relationships because they don't know another way. In other words, they don't know a different way of handling it. There might be some really important background stories that have happened in this relationship that have caused hurt and conflict and dysfunction and hate and resentment and all sorts of things, to the point that it's just not a functional relationship, and people don't have any other mechanism to deal with it other than just breaking it off completely, which is understood sometimes, but also very, very sad. But I do want to just mention, and I think mention in the context of the time of year that we're in, right? And as a sort of a basis, that, you know, we're now in the Jewish calendar in a period called the 3 weeks. And the 3 weeks is a time where we mourn the destruction of both temples that stood in Jerusalem close to 2,000 years ago. The first one was about 2,500 years ago. And the Talmud tells us, and I know we've talked about this in various different contexts, but the Talmud tells us that the temple was destroyed because of something called Sinat Chinam. Sinat Chinam means baseless hatred. And the Talmud tells a whole story about two friends and enemies, and the whole thing got out of control. But the question always is, what does it mean? What does the Talmud mean by Sinat Chinam, baseless hatred? If you ask anyone that hates anyone, and you ask them what's the reason, I guarantee you they'll have a reason. They'll have a reason. You don't know what this person did to me. You don't know what this person said to me. You don't know how the person hurt me, offended me, whatever the case is. There's always a reason. So how could the Talmud refer to hatred as baseless hatred? First of all, what that tells us is that sometimes there is a basis, but there is a thing called baseless hatred. And I think the reason is because, as the commentaries explain, that sometimes it's not the story that causes the hate. It's the lack of tolerance. It's the insecurity that we have to make space for other people. It's the clashing we have with other people that creates the rationale, not the other way around. In other words, sometimes, and not always, but sometimes we just cannot tolerate other people's success, other people's differences, other people's superiority to us, maybe their talents, their skills, there's jealousy, there's all kinds of things that play into it. And part of it has to do with our own ego. And when I say ego, I mean ego as an expression of deep insecurity, that we're so insecure with ourselves that we have to constantly protect our fragile self, and that makes it hard to make room for others. So sometimes there is a concept of baseless hatred. Baseless hatred means, yes, of course you have a reason. Yes, there's a reason why I don't talk to that person. But is that really a reason to go to the extreme of breaking off the relationship completely? That needs to be examined. If there are reasons, they need to be dealt with. But sometimes there's a deep-rooted resistance to really celebrating the other person's success, not being jealous of the other people. You know, one of the greatest relationships that we read about in the Torah is between Moses and his brother Aaron. And when Moses was the younger brother, and when he was by the burning bush and God was going to send him to Egypt to become the leader of the Jewish nation, he said that he's not worthy. First of all, he felt he's not leadership material. He was not an orator at that point. Moses actually had a speech impediment. And he said, you know, I have an older brother. He's much better than me. And the Torah says that God told Moses, not only will Aaron not worry and not be upset, but you should understand that when you get to Egypt and Aaron comes out to meet you, he will actually see you and he'll be happy at your success. He'll be happy for you that you were chosen the leader. Because often there's even amongst siblings, amongst family members, amongst closest people, there's jealousy, there's deep-rooted insecurity, which leads to an egocentric sort of protection of self to the exclusion of others. And we learn from Aaron, who we know the Pirkei Avot tells us was a pursuer of peace and love, that he was happy for Moses' success, and therefore he had no trace of jealousy. And they had such a beautiful, unbelievable relationship. So yes, there are reasons, and I don't know what the most common ones are. There's many, many different ones. But also one needs to look at deep-rooted causes as well sometimes. You're muted, I think.
I am muted, that's correct. I'm going to throw a curveball here, something we didn't prepare for, just a question that came to my mind now. And we always like to make the shmooze a little bit personal. So obviously, without sharing names and details and you know, sort of, has there ever been a time in your life when you've been tempted with this? I'm not going to ask you, is there anyone you don't talk to? That's a very personal question. I actually believe the answer is no. But as far as I know, but has there ever been a case or has someone ever done anything to you in your life where you've been tempted to just cut off the relationship with them? Has that ever happened to you?
Yes. Oh, you want me to explain? Yeah, of course. Because we all have insecurities, we all have egos, we all have also sometimes reasons. Yes, there's been times, both from people that are close and people that are not so close. There's been, but I, to date at least, I can't predict the future. I hope this will always be the case, but I've tried to work through it, and especially with the people who are close, I've tried always to make a very, very firm commitment with myself that I cannot ruin those relationships. So I have to keep them at any cost. Now there are those relationships that I will maybe talk about this later that are closer and further, but I've, you know, there's also sometimes people, in other words, has there been times where I felt hurt or felt tempted when I felt right, even I felt I was really right, in the right, because most of us do that. We feel that we're right normally, which is another discussion, whether that's always a good thing, but we normally feel that we're right. And yes, because that I have tempted, but I've kind of heard many, many years ago, this phrase that we always talk about choosing to be happy rather than right. We learn that from children, you know, that children do that. Children fight, and then 5 seconds later, they make up. The closer people are, the more they fight in a way. Family fight more than other people for some reason. But I think we need to learn from children or remain children a little bit, and sometimes learn how to choose to be happy rather than right.
Before we go on, why do you think that is? That family tend to. Why is it that way? That the closer you are to people. I mean, we see this even in a more broader sense amongst the Jewish people. Like, we seem to fight a lot. Like, in a more specific situation, in a more sort of family situation, why do you feel like family people tend to not get along more? What's the reason for that?
I think that's a great question. I think probably because, first of all, we know each other more. Therefore, we know each other's strengths and weaknesses. We much more privy to what really goes on behind the scenes. We feel a lot more hurt sometimes because we feel a breach of trust or a letdown, and really be let down if someone is so close to me, they should really love me. How can they do that to me? We talk, you know, we family after all, et cetera, et cetera. And also I think sometimes it comes from a good place. The closer people are, the more passionate they are. And I think that goes to your question about why Jews fight more. Jews fight a lot. I mean, look at Israel. I mean, gosh, like, which country has so many government parties and quite sometimes I think, not sometimes, I think for sure, not legitimately so, just at each other's throats. So I'll tell you a little cute story that I once said, you know, also it's got to do with passion. We're a very passionate people. Right? We're a very extreme people for the good and for the bad. So I'll tell you a little story. There's a story of one of the great sages that, I don't know, I think he passed away like 30 years ago or something. His name was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, a very, very clever rabbi who lives there. He was very knowledgeable, very great. He was a leader of a yeshiva, but known for his deep wisdom. And a shul once approached him with a big problem. And they said that there's a very big politics that breaks out in the shul every so often. What was the issue? The issue was that there's a particular passage of the Shabbat davening called Avarachamim that on certain weeks, there's a difference of custom whether you're supposed to say that paragraph or not. And that particular shul, every time that paragraph would come along, that particular Shabbat would come along, there would be this major fight in the shul. Some people said, no, I remember grandfathers, the custom in the shul is not to say it. Other one would say, no, you talk nonsense. I don't know where you came from. And they would be at each other. They would scream at each other. And it was just impossible. So they went to Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and they said, how do we solve this problem? I mean, it's like a dreaded Shabbat. This every time the Shabbat comes around, it's like this blow up, an absolute explosion. So he answered, he said a very clever thing. He said, you know, it's not such a bad thing, he says. Because he says, you know, what you don't want is, God forbid, that there will come a time that no one's going to fight about that passage in the prayer book because no one's going to care. He says, he looked at it, he says, they're passionate. They want to guard and protect the customers of their fathers. They want to guard the sanctity of the shul. Now, were they fighting the right way? Did they express it the right way? Are they listening? Are they communicating properly? Are they looking for compromise? Probably not, and that's the failing. But sometimes we fight because we're passionate. It's also a reason.
Yeah. So I want to get on to sort of how do we resolve disagreements and resentments. But before we get there, is there ever a scenario where you would suggest to someone that they actually continue not to talk to each other? So obviously, as you said, for the most part, you try to work it out and we'll get into later how. But is there ever, I mean, there's no rule without an exception, right? So is there ever an exception to that? Is there ever a situation where you would actually encourage an absolute stop to that relationship, including between siblings, children and parents, and all of that?
So, yeah, that's a great question. So I think just before I answer that question, I want to clarify the question a bit, right? Because when you say, is there ever a scenario is just not to talk to the person? That's different than saying, is there ever a scenario where you tell people to keep a distance? Those are two different things, okay? So if the question is, do you tell people to hold back and to pull back and to weaken the contact and weaken the relationship? Yes, absolutely. Are there scenarios in the extreme situation where you really tell people, you know, in the case of protection and abuse and really just becoming possible, we tell people they need to really break off? Yeah, there are very rare cases. But as a rule, I feel that that's never a good option. And I'll tell you why. And let's go back to the whole root of the thing, right? In conflict, in relationships that have conflict, there's three scenarios of which most people choose one, number one and number three. What do I mean? So the number one and number three is like this. Either that they continue the relationship and continuously fight, so it becomes a relationship where people not only are talking to each other, but they're screaming at each other all the time, right? So they do relate, they do talk, and every time they talk, there's an explosion and there's a fight and they scream and they shout, they abuse, they insult, they offend, they disrespect, and so on and so forth. Then there comes a point where someone says, no, this is just too much, so I don't know how to handle it, so I'm just going to break off completely. I can't handle it anymore. I need to protect myself, which is true. People do need to protect themselves to some degree, and therefore they break off the relationship. And therefore, they break off the relationship to the point where they're not talking to the person, they never have any contact with the person, nothing, right? The problem is, the reason that happens is because people don't know how to take the second option. And this is really the crux of most of these cases. People don't know how to navigate a relationship by creating the appropriate boundaries and yet still maintaining the relationship because sometimes just the right thing to do. I'll give you an extreme example so you'll know what I'm talking about. And the reason why I call it an extreme example is because sometimes this conversation comes up between children and parents, right? You'll often have an adult child. I'm talking about. I don't mean a child as a young child. I'm talking about an adult child that will bring up a discussion that they have an older parent, a mother, a father, who's completely impossible, right? Interferes, always undermining, and it's just too much. It's just impossible, and the person feels undermined and hurt. No one's to, even an adult. No one wants to feel put down or undermined by their parents. We all like to have acceptance from our parents. We all like to have validation from our parents. It doesn't matter how old we are and so on and so forth, right? So I don't call it an extreme example because often I get the question, is it okay just not to speak to them at all? And what I say is no, actually it's not okay because you have a problem. In that case, it's really not okay. Unless there's some extreme example, but generally speaking, right? Why is that okay? Because there's a mitzvah in the Torah. It's an ethical thing, right? Ethically, the Talmud tells us we have to honor our parents. Ethically, you don't actually have the luxury to say, I'm not talking to my mother, I'm not talking to my father, right? Because that's ethically wrong. On the other hand, the Talmud does say, and it tells a story about one of the great sages who is continuously harassed by his mother and he created boundaries. So the real answer to that is, no, it's not really okay. It is okay for you to protect yourself. It is okay for you to create boundaries where you only talk to them every so often. It is okay to say certain things I'm not going to do and I'm gonna say no. It is okay to limit the time of the phone calls, but it's never okay to not talk to them altogether, and particularly with parents, and it's never okay to be disrespectful to them, right?
Just to clarify for a second, I mean, I assume you're talking about majority, meaning there obviously is a unique situation where you can, for example, just sort of extreme, the parents severely abuse their child or something, or an extremely, extremely toxic situation where it's very unhealthy to continue that relationship.
If it's unhealthy to continue the relationship at any level, then the Talmud tells us an interesting thing. Then sometimes in very extreme cases, it's okay to not talk to them and okay to break off the relationship. What's not okay is to actively be disrespectful to them. So it's better not to talk to them at all rather than insult them, particularly when you talk to parents, right?
Yeah.
But let me go back a second. You see, the point is like this, because often I get a comment like this. I think this is one of the most often comments I get, right? So I will say to a person, you know, just call them once, if they live overseas, let's say. Call them once a week for 5 minutes, say Shabbat Shalom. Call them, visit them, or if they're more in proximity, visit, you know, it's your parent, you still have to visit them once in 2 weeks for a few minutes. And I always get the comment back, but they never think it's enough. And they're not going to be happy with that, right? And then that's where our own insecurity comes in. So then I feel like I haven't done the right thing because they're not happy with me anyway. It wasn't good enough. And the answer to that is, sometimes it's not about if you're happy or not, if they're happy or not. It's about what the right thing is. Because it's important for you to go out of your comfort zone. It's important for you to say, no, it's my parent and I still need to visit them. And therefore, even though I know that they're going to say afterwards, or like, you know, I could talk to them and then they'll tell me, you know, you never ever come. Like, you never talk to me. You never call me. You never bring the kids. Whatever the case is, right? And you know it's not true. But you still have to do the right thing. You still have to go out of your... You have to know... You have to work out, and if you can't work it out yourself, you have to work out with other people, a mentor, a coach, a rabbi, a counselor, whatever the case is. Work out what the healthy boundary is and what is good for you and maybe a little bit out of your comfort zone. Work out what the moral and ethical thing from a Jewish point of view is. If, you know, we try to live our lives based on the Jewish ethics as well, and therefore, or primarily really, and then do it. It doesn't matter if it's enough. It doesn't matter if they're happy. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, you've done the right thing and it's good for your growth. Now, I gave an extreme example because that's with parents, because parents has a moral and ethical obligation of a mitzvah called kibud avaim. But the truth is, this extends to others also. It is not good for us. That's the truth. Right? Think of it this way. It's not good for us to be not civil with people. It's not good for us not to talk to someone. I mean, I have had people when they tell me, you know, I haven't spoken to that person for 15 years and I'm okay. And you know right away when a person generally says, I'm okay, it's like a guy who's under the influence of alcohol says, I've drunk a bit too much, but I'm okay, I'm not drunk, right? The person says that, you know, there's a problem, right? So the same thing people say, and they keep talking about it because they bring it up often. And the reason they bring it up often is because they're not okay, because they haven't resolved it. They haven't resolved it in themselves. What they've done is they've run away from it. They've escaped. They've cut off the relationship because that's the easy option, right? So The harder option is to navigate it, to work out what the issue is, to create the boundaries, and yet still have the strength to be dignified, to wish the person Shabbat Shalom, to wish the person happy birthday, to wish the, to just call up once in a, you know, once in a while to say hello to the person, to see him in the street, to be civil and respectful to the person. It's good for, it's harder for us, but it's healthy for us, because that's not escaping. That's confronting the problem and then working out and navigating it. Each case is different. Navigating what's the best way to actually navigate this, be civil, be a respectful person, have the sense where you're strong enough to create boundaries and yet still tolerate the person and still perhaps talk to the person once in a while. You don't have to be a person's best friend. You see, this is the issue, right? You don't have to be close to anyone, even a family member. You don't have to be close to them. There's no mitzvah anywhere where there's no commandment that says you must be very close with that person. Nowhere.
It's right? Interesting that there's no commandment they have to love your parents either.
Correct.
It's kind of, you have to honor your parents.
Out of respect. Yeah, correct. Yeah. People are different. We choose who we're compatible with. We choose who we're close with. We choose who we confide in. And that's fine. I mean, it's beautiful and it's fantastic when parents and children have a nice relationship. And it's always better. But you're right. You don't have to be close to anyone. And every relationship is different. But we do need to be respectful to anyone. This concept of not, you know, of cutting someone out is more of a lot of times, again, I'm not judging anyone, and there are exceptions to the rule. I'm talking about, generally speaking, that's more of an escape. To say that I have such resentment for the person that I cannot even look at that person and talk to them is I once had someone that just tells, you know, and sometimes with the right boundaries, you can also soften a relationship. I once had someone that wouldn't say even good morning to me if I met them. And it was really obnoxious, to be honest. And I made a point, every time I saw the person, I would just nod and say good morning. And they wouldn't answer. Today, they say a nice good morning to me. And we're not close, we have a decent relationship. Because wow. I think we have to do the right thing. And sometimes, you know, it takes two to fight. And sometimes we have to be civil. Now, it was a calculated decision because obviously, my heart, I thought, by the way, I say this every time I tell stories, personal stories, I only tell you the stories that work. I don't tell you the stories that didn't work, right? So that's why I'm definitely not trying to display that I'm a perfect person who knows how to navigate relationships. But, okay, but I'm just saying that, obviously, my emotional response is, you know, I'm not even going to bother saying good morning to you. If you're not prepared to answer me, I'm not even going to bother. But no, I made a conscious effort to say, no, I'm going to say hello because it's the right thing to do. It's a respectful thing to do. I don't have to be your friend. We don't have to be close, but we have to be civil. By the way, I think there's a question in the chat, and I think that's good. If people want to put questions in the chat, I think that's a...
So I don't see it. It's obviously something that's a private message to you. Oh. If you want to ask a question in the chat, either put it in the for everyone or actually do it to me better. So I'll read it out. If you want to ask it more privately, you could just sort of... you could direct message to me.
Yes, I'm just going to ask. I'll just read this question because someone asked the question: do these three options work in the reverse too, parent to child? I think it does. I think very, very much. I think all relationships work. Often there's just an explosive, toxic relationship between parent and child. So that's option one. They do talk, but they just, you know, parent makes an effort and they just keep on fighting and keep on screaming, and which is not healthy. Sometimes then a parent calls off the relationship, which is very, very sad between parent and child. It should never happen. It's very, very sad. You see it happen, but it's really tragic. And no one gains. That's true. No one gains. And not the... Again, it's an escape. I'm not judging it. It sometimes can be the tempting escape, but it is an escape. And of course, the second option is the best, to find a way. You don't have to be close to your children either. If it doesn't work, some parents are not that close to their children, but there still needs to be a relationship.
So before we go on... And I really want to get to how do you actually resolve this and actually sort of practical strategies. But I want to go deeper for a moment. And I didn't actually plan to ask you this, but I think this is something that you're passionate about. And I think it's actually more of an underlying theme here, because I think that in today's day and age, and I think for the most part, it's a good thing. I mean, there's definitely positive sides to this. We teach children and we teach people in general the idea of standing up for yourself and protecting yourself. And I think there's a very good positive side to that, especially when it comes to, you know, children, telling children you need to protect yourself from people who want to abuse you, et cetera, et cetera. But the sort of the flip side to that is when we tell people to protect themselves a little bit too much, then it's all about yourself. And then there's no idea of like, there's no aspect of giving in or going, as you said before, going beyond your comfort zone. In other words, I think, as you said, a lot of times when people break off a relationship, it's at least in their mind about protecting themselves. And but you're telling people to go beyond their comfort zone. How do you reconcile these two things? How do you reconcile the idea of standing up for yourself, being strong, protecting yourself on the one hand, and also this idea that we need to grow, we need to sometimes do things that we're uncomfortable with? And where do you sort of go beyond the line of going beyond your comfort zone to making yourself a shmata, you know, sort of so to not protecting yourself? How do you sort of
Find those two things? I'm really happy you asked that question. I am passionate about it. By the way, all these questions, each one is like a subject of an entire discussion.
Really. And just by the way, just to emphasize again, anyone who wants to ask a question, please do, as long as it's respectful. In the chat, if you want to put it for everyone, or just direct message it to me, whether you're on Facebook or on Zoom, I'll read out the question.
So, yes, that's an excellent question, and it's a very, very important thing to highlight and very relevant to this discussion, really. The Talmud talks about this a lot, right? So on the one hand, being humble does not mean being what they call it, as you said, being what's called in Yiddish a shmata, right? Every person is supposed to have self-respect. Every person has self-dignity. And yes, we're supposed to protect our health, our emotional health, our psychological health, our spiritual health, and so on and so forth. However, sometimes society today, as with everything, takes it to an extreme, and not takes it to an extreme, but distorts it, actually, right? So we find that on the one hand, a person has to be able to set boundaries and be functional and know their selves, be in touch with their own emotions, and know what they can do, what they can't do. That's all true. On the other hand, the Talmud actually has an amazing thing. The Talmud talks about this concept called ma'avir al midotav, which means the ability for someone to offend you and not scream back and not take offense. Or the Talmud says that hane'elavim ve'einam olvim, that those that are able to take offense from others and not offend them back, the Talmud describes great reward.
Right.
So how do these two things go together? And I think it's very simple, certainly not simple. I mean, the explanation is simple, put it that way. It all depends where it's coming from, right? One of the great focuses in Jewish thought is that we need to not take ourselves that seriously. Now, what does that mean? It means that we have to be humble, not take ourselves that seriously, but it has to come from a strength, not from a weakness. That's the issue. In other words, people will be damaged emotionally if they just cop offense and abuse from every single person and never stand up for themselves, if it's coming from an insecurity. You know, I don't like confrontations, you know, right? You know, in the Torah, there's a pasuk, there's a verse that says, "Lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha." Do not hate your friend in your heart. What does that mean? Not to hate in your heart? Of course, don't hate them. Why in your heart? And the Talmud says that the best thing is that you cannot hate someone in your heart, because resentment in the heart is destructive and that's unhealthy. Now, often when people just don't answer, don't stand for themselves, they are carrying around hate in their hearts. Because really the reason that they're taking the abuse, or they're taking the offense, or they're taking the hurt, is because they're not able to stand up for themselves and they're insecure, but deep down they feel very upset about it. And therefore that's unhealthy and destructive. However, if we build up our own self-esteem, if we build up our own self-perception, right? If we understand our intrinsic value, if we understand who we really are, and that we become much more secure and comfortable with ourselves, then a lot of times we don't take ourselves, the more strong we are inside, the more strong we are with ourselves, the less we take ourselves seriously, and the less we have to stand up for ourselves every 5 seconds. So in other words, when we have to go out of our comfort zone, sometimes we have to be able to say, you know, I'm gonna call up and say hello to that person, even though they were so mean to me. Why? Because I'm okay with it, because I actually have let go. I'm actually really coming from a strength. So when the Talmud says that the greatest reward is given to a person who cannot answer when being embarrassed by someone else, what the Talmud is referring to is someone that's doing that from a strength. If a person cannot do that and they're not up to that, then they have to find a respectful way of talking to someone else about it. Screaming back at the person doesn't help. breaking off the relationship doesn't help. That's why you have to learn how to navigate, maybe communicate to the person. We'll talk about that soon. Maybe just, you know, work it through with the person. But screaming back or breaking off completely are both escapes. They don't help. So yes, the question is a very good question. We need to teach our children also not, yes, to stand up for yourself, but not, that doesn't mean that every time someone says something to you, you gotta bully back or you gotta stand up for yourself. Sometimes you need to know that you're just better than that, and it needs to come from a strength where it's fine.
Yeah, I would love to ask you more about how do you teach that to children, but that's definitely not the topic of tonight. So maybe we'll do a different schmooze on that. There are a few questions, and I'm going to get to them, Bli Neder, but I just want to go on a little bit more in the conversation, then I'll get to those questions. And I want to just move on to the main part of this, but I will ask those questions. So if someone's harboring some serious resentment, what is the best way to let go and to forgive? So you're saying that not talking to each other is not a good option. But I have resentment, right? Someone did something to me very, very bad. I feel very insulted. I feel very whatever the feeling of resentment is. How do you let go of that? How do you forgive?
Okay, so that's, I think, the crux of the whole matter. First of all, what is forgiveness? What does that mean? So we're going to have to summarize. It's actually, on a Thursday morning, I once gave an entire series on forgiveness for about 6 weeks. So it's difficult to take 6 hours of material and condense it into 5 minutes. But let me highlight the issue here. The reason often why people carry around resentment, or let's say the other way around, the reason why people find it very hard to forgive is because they don't understand forgiveness. Okay. So let's say two very important things about forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness is not about agreeing with the other person. We often are resistant to forgive because we think if I forgive you, that it means I'm agreeing that you're right. And that's not true. It's perfectly okay for people of different perspectives. And it's perfectly okay that if you did something to me that I think is really wrong and I've worked it through and I've tried all angles and I actually really think that you were completely wrong, that's actually fine. And if I forgive you, it doesn't mean that I agree with you. Forgiveness is really about letting go of hate. That's what it is, number one. Number two, forgiveness is as important for the forgiver than it is for the one who's being forgiven. So the Rambam and the Talmud tells us that when we repent on Yom Kippur and we say sorry to God, it only works for mitzvot, which are between us and God. It doesn't work if we've hurt someone else. If we've hurt someone else, we have to first seek forgiveness from them. They have to forgive us. And then we can ask God for forgiveness. So therefore, it's very important to seek forgiveness if we think we've wronged someone, right? However, we know that it's also incredibly important for the person who's giving the forgiveness. How do I know this? And some of you have heard this from me before, but in the Siddur, in the prayer book, in the bedtime Shema, there's a prayer we say every night called the prayer of forgiveness. Now, imagine this. I'm lying on my bed, about to go to sleep, and I offer a prayer. It goes something like this. Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, I hereby forgive all those that have wronged me and did things to me and offended me and hurt me, etc., etc., in this life, in a previous life, whatever that means. And I go on, right? Now, let's say there's three or four people that have really hurt me and I go to sleep and I forgive them. First of all, it's not just supposed to be a prayer that you say, you're supposed to mean it, right? Separate story. But what good is it if they don't even know they're being forgiven? What good is it to say a prayer like out of my bed? Right? Or near my bed as I'm about to go to sleep. And the answer is very simple, because when I say that prayer of forgiveness, I'm not doing it so much for the person, I'm doing it for me. I need to forgive. I need to let go of forgiveness. I need to let go of resentment. Letting go of resentment does not mean I agree. I can disagree with you, but I'm going to choose not to hate you. I'm going to choose and understand you have a perspective. Maybe there's a reason. And even if you're completely wrong, maybe it's your background. Maybe it's the way you were brought up. I don't mean you. I hope you were brought up okay. No, I'm just kidding. Right? So maybe it's circumstance. Anything can happen. I totally disagree with you. I will tell you in a respectful way. I'll even communicate that I forgive you, but I am prepared to let go. Now, it's written, the Lubavitch Rebbe actually discusses this in a very famous essay about forgiveness, that there's levels of forgiveness. Because not everyone can reach forgiveness right away. It's a long process to come to the level we can actually forgive, but there's different levels of forgiveness. The lowest level of forgiveness, the bare minimum, is that you at least you're still upset, but you don't wish any bad on the other person, right? You don't just, you really sincerely don't. Now, everyone will tell you, often when they're really upset with someone, they'll tell you, no, I don't wish them any bad. I wish them all the best, but you know, you really hurt me and I don't want to talk to them, right? It's not always true because, you know, sometimes I've heard from people, you know, when something happens to the other person, you say, oh, you know, aha, you know, what goes around comes around, and, you know, I don't want to say anything, but, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So even that is a level to come to the point where you actually sincerely don't want any bad on the other person. On the other hand, that's the low level of forgiveness. The standard level of forgiveness, which is the aspiration we should all aspire to, is not to hate. It's to let go of resentment. As Rabbi Twersky says, not to let the person reside in your brain rent-free, right? Not to let the other person continuously live in your brain rent-free. By the way, this is the point. When you say, I don't talk to someone, that person actually is occupying a lot of your brain space. Normally people say, you know, it's easier. I'm just going to let go and I don't talk to the person. Normally that's not the case. Normally the person actually occupies a lot of brain space because you think about it a lot. Therefore, the forgiveness, and again, this is something that needs a lot of explanation, but the crux of forgiveness, at least from a Jewish perspective, is the concept of letting go of hate, not to walk around resenting the person, to be able to find the peace to say, I really sincerely do not hate that person. I disagree with them. I still disagree with them. And maybe even I'm not going to even restore the friendship to its previous level of intensity. I'm going to create more boundaries because I need to, but I don't hate the person. Therefore, I'm able still to be dignified. I'm able to talk to the person. I'm able to be respectful to the person. I'm able to greet the person. I'm able to give a phone call to the person and so on. The highest form of forgiveness is a very high where you actually restore the relationship to what it was and make it even stronger. That's not always possible. And in fact, that's not always necessary. It is not even right. Sometimes it's not a good thing to do. But the standard level of forgiveness is that thing of giving up, of letting go of resentment. And that's the first thing we need to do.
There's a question in the chat which is directly related to what you just said, so I'll ask it. So you're talking about the forgiver, right? So if someone's hurt me, so I'm going to forgive them and it's good for me. What happens if I've hurt somebody else and they've stopped talking to me? As a result, and I feel bad about it, and I try to ask them for forgiveness, and they refuse to forgive me. So what happens if they never so the question was, what if they never forgive you despite genuine attempts to be forgiven?
So if you do it properly and you're genuinely remorseful and you ask for forgiveness, I'll tell you from a halachic point of view, Maimonides talks about this. If you genuinely ask for forgiveness, now also one needs to be clever about this. If you really hurt someone, if you did it yesterday and you realize a big mistake, wait a while. Like there's a saying in the Prokei Avot, don't appease someone when they're very angry, right? There's also timing of a conversation and there's how to have the conversation. So first of all, maybe if that happens, we need to talk to someone and find out what's the best way to approach and what's the best way to have that conversation. However, just like it's important to ask for forgiveness, it is important to forgive. And we are taught by the Rambam that if you ask someone for forgiveness, you should ask them a few times. And after that, if they still refuse to forgive you, you've done what you need to do. That's what you've done. And you know what? You, as I said before, don't worry about the relation. Worry about you and what's right. And therefore, if you see that if they don't talk to you, if they don't want to forgive you, if you meet them in the street, nod your head, say hello. Send them a text wishing them Shana Tova, all that kind of stuff. And with time, sometimes they come around. But if they will, but if they won't forgive you, you've done what you need to do. That's
okay. I'll ask another question someone asked in the chat, which is related to what I was going to ask anyway. So you say it was sort of restoring to have a functional relationship, not necessarily a very close relationship. But so first of all, I'll ask this in two parts. So first of all, how do you define a functional relationship? So for example, if I have a sibling, let's say, and we weren't talking, and now I want to restore sort of a functional relationship, what does that exactly look like? Does that mean that I call them once a year? Does that mean that I invite them when I marry off my child? I invite them to the wedding? Is there sort of various levels in this? And sort of by extension, the question in the chat was, there are people who are boundary breakers. For these people, setting boundaries represents an opportunity for conquest rather than opportunity to partner with the other's parameters. Setting boundaries with boundary breakers doesn't work. Does Rabbi Gerari have a comment on this?
Well, that's a very excellent question. I think we're going to have a part two of the Shavuos. This is like good stuff. So what does a functional relationship look like, first of all? So I'm not sure if if it's all to do with frequency or time, you know, sometimes very even with close people, you know, I have close, very close friends overseas that I can go sometimes months without talking to them, and it's nothing to do with the relationship. It's because we're both busy with it, but when there's something, you know. So I think it's about being respectful, touching base once in a while. When you do come together in a thing, being respectful to each other, and most importantly, not cutting the other person out. Where does that manifest itself? By a simcha, for example, like not to invite them to your children's wedding, and you know, and not to spitefully, so to speak, cut them out of important things. I think that's really a problem. Now, let's say, and again, every relationship is different. So let's say, going to the question the person asked in the chat, which is an excellent question. So let's say, you know, you create a boundary with a person, might be with a parent, or it might be with someone else. You know, you call them once in a while. But then the problem is, every time you call them, they break the boundary. So for example, you call them to have a civil, nice discussion, and they end up abusing you on the phone. They end up picking a fight on the phone, right? Which is not a good. So I think sometimes we need to, and this is the hardest part to do, which is really, but it's so important, as I said before. We need to learn the art of communicating and having difficult conversations. So there might be a thing where, you know, I really value our relationship. I value, whether it's a parent or particularly the parent, sometimes this is true. And I am, but I, you know, I really want to call you once in a while. I don't mind if you call me once in a while, but the relationship has to be respectful. We understand we're coming from different worlds. We disagree. I'm not talking about right and wrong, but we come from different, you know, we have different perspectives. And therefore, one thing I'm not prepared to do is I'm not prepared for you to talk to me in a disrespectful way or an abusive way, right? And then what I say to people is, and then you try. If they break the boundary, then you interrupt the relationship temporarily. In other words, you say to the person, look, that's breaking the boundary, and therefore I'm not going to talk to you for a while. I'm going to try, but then you keep trying. Eventually, not all cases, but eventually a person, you know, gets the message that it's just not, you know, because one shouldn't have to put up only, you know, there's some great sages that could do this. One shouldn't have to put up with constant boundary breaking, like constant demands or undermining or abuse or disrespect. So sometimes it's about, I'm going to try and I'll never break it off and I'll keep trying. But if that's the way you talk to me, I'm going to put it off for a while. Something like that.
Okay. Once again, if anyone has any other questions, please feel free to ask. There's another question in the chat. How would you have felt if you kept saying hello to that person and they never responded?
So they didn't. It was like about 3 years they didn't respond. And it happened to be that I bumped into that person often for whatever reason. Not very often, but it was fairly often. And I just...
Well,
afterwards, it became easy because I think I was like so determined to do the right thing. And to, maybe it was even a bit of ego to show that I'm doing the right thing, you know, to run the high moral ground. I'll be honest. But so, yeah. But again, if it comes from a strength, it's not a problem. In other words, I did have a disagreement with that person, and I know why that person was upset. I was respectful as I could. I made it very clear that I was not trying to offend that person at all, but we have different perspectives about how something should be done. The person took offense incorrectly, I believe, and refused to talk to me. But I just, yeah, always was, in that story at least, always was, always answered.
Okay. Just an interesting question. So sometimes, this is a more of a broader question in a way. So sometimes, let's say you have a family where the parents of the family are in a fight with somebody, they don't talk to, or let's say even within the families, let's say you have, let's say, hypothetically speaking, my parents don't speak to their sister, their brother, their parents, whatever it is, and I'm an adult child. Is there anything right in me fighting my parents' fights? In other words, sort of, you know, if you don't talk to your mother, so I'm not going to talk to her either. Or if you don't talk to a random person in the community, I'm not going to talk to them either. Or I'll be, is there any aspect of honor? In other words, sometimes people feel like it's like honoring their parents. Like, you hurt my parents, why should I talk to you? Some kind of thing, even though it never directly affected me, if that makes sense.
Okay. So the short answer is no, I'm not a very big fan of relatives fighting their relatives' fights. They might have to fight their own fights and make their own decisions. But, you know, remind me of a good story. There's a story about two brothers that whenever they would get together, they would always, they were very poor. Whenever they would get together and have a meal, they would always sit on opposite sides of the table. And they always had like, they wouldn't have one tablecloth. They would always have like two different tablecloths. And that was like the custom in the family. Until someone decided to ask them why, and they said, actually, I don't know why. That's the tradition in the family. And someone decided to do a bit of research into why this custom evolved. And they came to the conclusion, they eventually found out what happened was that the parents of these two brothers, or the two grandparents, whatever, that like there was an earlier generation of siblings, they were much more wealthy and they were much more well-off, and they used to have very good food. But the problem was that the one was a meat lover, only ate meat, and never ate dairy. And the other one was a vegetarian and never ate meat, only ate milk. And because they both observed kashrus, whenever they would get together, they would like to get together to celebrate simchas together. But you know, the halacha is you cannot eat meat and milk. Two people cannot eat meat and milk by a table on the same tablecloth. So they have to have some sort of separation so that there's clear that the meat and milk shouldn't mix. But with time, the meat guy didn't have meat. The milk guy didn't have milk. All they had was just bread and water. But they knew this custom, you have to eat on different tablecloths. So the point of the story is that, you know, sometimes fights happen in certain families, and like, you know, this family doesn't talk to that family, and the next generation doesn't even know why. Not even sure why it happened. Not even sure what the issue was. Not even sure what the background is. They just know you're not supposed to talk to the other person. So we have to be very careful with that. So I think the answer to that question is like this. If a person has parents, for example, they're in a fight with their sister, obviously you always have to be respectful to your parents. So don't do anything that's going to hurt them. Like, you know, don't sort of, you know, go tell your father, you know, I invited the auntie someone and, you know, we had a great time. And, you know, it's going to hurt your parents, your mother or your father, right? But I think, and not necessarily you have to become their best friend either, but I think people's fights are people's fights. Your parents' fights or your sister's fights or your brother's fights are their fights. They made their decisions rightly or wrongly. You have to be a respectful person. You have to be a civil person. And I don't think there's any reason to perpetuate the fights of parents and just broaden the fight more than it needs to be broadened.
We've had a question here. This is a very sort of specific question. You would need to know more details to answer it. But what do you think of someone having their own minion rather than join the broader family minion after the death of a relative?
Okay, that is a very specific question. I'm not sure the background of that question. I'm happy for someone to...
Yeah, maybe if that question is relevant practically, maybe just email my father. My father's email address is rabbig@bina.com.au. So you can...
I'm happy to deal with that. I just don't understand the question properly. Yeah.
Okay. Now, so for the remainder of the time, unless anyone has any questions, I want to talk about a little bit more preventative stuff. So, I mean, as you said, sometimes these things start from 30, 40 years ago when you were growing up and there were certain issues then, and obviously you're dealing with more going backwards. But sometimes these things develop later. And I think one of the examples, I'm not so relevant in Australia necessarily, but the idea is definitely relevant, and that is when there are very big differences in values within a family. So I know that during the, for example, where this became sort of news, during the 2016 election in America, you had this sort of phenomena of like, family splitting over who voted for Hillary Clinton or who voted for Donald Trump. Like that sort of like family stopped talking to each other because each side felt like, you know, how could you vote for such a person? You know, it's such a terrible thing. I don't think politics is as polarizing here, at least not yet. But the idea, like you have different values within a family. Let's say you have one person who's very religious, one person who's not religious at all. And that can create a big clash. How do you prevent that from becoming a situation where there's a total breakdown in the relationship?
Yes, I think that goes to the core of what relationships are about, right? I think it's very tragic. By the way, sometimes it happens again, from that story I told before, from a good place. People are very passionate about their views. And by the way, it's good to be passionate about your views. Passion is a good thing. Conviction is a good thing. Values, conviction of values, all these things are good things. But we also have to know the essence of what human relationships are all about. And that is, at the end of the day, we might have different perspectives, we might have even different values. And different perspectives, different values, by the way, are very different. When you have a different perspective on something than me, then I really need to respect that to the point where I need to respect it as an alternative truth. In other words, maybe I'm right, maybe you're right. I'm going to choose to do the best I can and believe what I believe, and you can believe what you believe. But I'm saying even more than that. Let's say we have a value conflict, right? Now, I have values which, if you have different values, I will say that you're wrong, and I will remember that, and I will actually believe that you're wrong, because a person should have values, and values are very important, and values mean that sometimes I believe in certain things that other people, I believe in certain things that absolute truths, and people don't believe in it, I believe are wrong. But it doesn't mean they're not a human being. They were created in the image of God, right? And we have to learn, and I think this is something we have to learn. This is so important. And this is, maybe this is the most important thing of all. We have to learn not how to get on. We have to learn how to fight. This is the problem nowadays, right? Getting on is easy. It's fighting that's the hard part. We have to learn how to fight. Husbands and wives have to learn how to argue. John Gottman says that he said that any marriage that doesn't have a conflict is a boring marriage. It's very important to fight. That's how you grow. You learn from other people's perspective. You get to appreciate other people. In Israel, there's different views. There's the religious and non-religious, the Hasidim, the non-Hasidim, the Sfarad, the Ashkenazim. And they should, God created us. God created the Jewish people in 12 tribes. We should fight. We should argue. We should, because we deepen our knowledge. We deepen our appreciation. We deepen ideas. We deepen creativity by arguing. But we have to learn how to argue. And that means we have to listen to each other and at least respect the other person's right to believe in something that I don't believe in. Or at least respect them for what they are. Don't judge them. Don't undermine them, right? So we have to learn how to combine passion with respect. We have to be very passionate about what we believe in. We shouldn't dampen our passion. But we have to learn the art of being extremely passionate about the things that we believe in, combined with a deep respect for another human being, which requires a lot of listening, it requires respect, and it requires humility, and requires the thing we said before. You know, if I'm very passionate about something, but I can stop and listen to your opposing view, which I happen to disagree with deeply for 5 minutes, that's coming for a strength. In other words, I'm very passionate, but the fact that you disagree with me, the fact that you even dare start disagreeing with me, doesn't, my world doesn't fall apart if I'm not insecure. So it goes back to what I said before. The more secure we are about who we are, about our identity, about our values, actually, the more it's easy to listen to other people. The fact that people fight disrespectfully and destructively is because maybe they're not so secure with their own values and their own convictions that they have. And therefore, I think that's the point. I think, briefly, I think we have to learn, again, not how to get on, we have to learn how to fight.
Brilliant. Okay. Thank you all so much for joining. Once again, everything we said tonight was without any judgment, God forbid. We're just discussing the idea. If anyone has any further questions, personal questions, feel free to contact Rabbi Gerari. Again, his email address is rabbig@bina.com.au. Also, it looks like we're going to be in lockdown for at least another week. There's many more lectures and shiurim happening on Zoom. Tomorrow night is Thursday night. That's correct. It is Wednesday, so I'm sure you know what it is. So Thursday night, which is tomorrow night, my father is going to be giving a lecture on this Zoom link, on the same Zoom, about testing the strength of your relationship. So not exactly the same topic, but maybe a more broader idea of testing the strength of your relationships. That's at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night on this Zoom. Please join us. If anyone wants to know more of what's happening at Bina in general and specifically over the lockdown, feel free to message me, to email my father, or contact us, and we'll let you know. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you so much for joining.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Stay safe.
You're welcome. All the best, everyone.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you, Rabbi.